Hi, my name is John Kim. I'm a therapist who went through his own rebirth many years ago, and I've been documenting my journey ever since, sharing my life lessons and revelations. I believe in casual over clinical, with you instead of at you. I come unrehearsed on purpose because self-help doesn't have to be so complicated. I'm super excited about today's guest. The way that we line up is she has a podcast called Do You Fucking Mind? And it's all about, I guess, mindset hacks. I don't know if hack's a good word, because I don't want to minimize what you do, but I love the idea of dense concepts broken down into kind of street level. You know, how we help people, there are things that are applicable, things that we can actually apply to our life, and her podcast is all about that. I've been kind of going in through that door for the last 15 years, so we're going to get to know Alexis.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Yes, she is calling in from the other side of the world, 9 a.m. in Australia.
That's right, yes.
So you know how Tim Ferriss has this question at the end? It's the billboard question he asks all his guests. I like to start in the beginning, and it's the billboard question. The question that I like to start with, it's a little bit throwing you into the deep end. What is your current greatest struggle? You can think about that for a second. What are you struggling with in your life?
Current greatest struggle. I think currently, and this is like, so far everything's been going really well, but I struggle lately to genuinely be able to switch off. So when I was talking about my goals for the year, yes, I've got business goals. Yes, I've got all these things, but it really was, I just want to have just more pockets of peace in my day where I'm not thinking about work, where I'm not, you know, once I leave my office, my mind's not there.
Yeah.
And even just the last couple of days, I've already been noticing a bit of a shift, which feels really good just based on what I've been doing. But definitely, I think when you start working for yourself, it's this exciting feeling of, oh, I've got all this freedom and control. But you actually, if you don't really pay attention, you actually become a little bit of a, like a hostage to your own business, because you're constantly thinking, what else do I need to do? I've got to, you know, it's kind of like when you're at uni, even when you're not there, you're thinking, oh, I've got exams, I've got this, I've got that. You don't have that peace of mind.
So knowing that, what have you done, if anything, to not burn the candle at both ends and really burn out?
So a couple of things I've had to do is extend a few deadlines, which I had set a lot earlier for myself. And I thought that I would be disappointed, but it's actually made me feel a lot better, a lot more balanced. It's the one thing that I've spoken a lot about on my podcast, but it's not getting on social media for the first 2 hours of the day. That really changes my day.
it changes how
you know, because people talk about time management, but also we should look at attention management and where we manage where our attention is placed. I think it massively affects my mood.
Not only when you get on, but also what you take in, I've noticed.
Definitely. Because, you know, I always say, I try to be just if you can be intentional in everything you do, even in social media use, it's fine to use it, but be intentional. Absorb content that's actually either beneficial or it makes you laugh or something. But we just get swept up and we kind of allow all these things to come up, and before we know it, it's been 30 minutes, an hour. So I try and be just more intentional.
I've also noticed that you know, if you click on, say, I don't know, you know, an elephant or a lion chasing an elephant or something, suddenly it sends you a gazillion videos, and then they become more graphic, and suddenly you're watching animals eating each other, and it hijacks your nervous system, you know? And so sometimes I use social media just to kind of zone out. I look at motorcycles, work, you know, things I'm into, workouts, but it's like one mistaken click throws you into a very slippery well of something else. And then you're right, 30 minutes of just your nervous system being activated. And then you're trying to go to sleep and you wonder why you can't. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Or like someone will send you something that they think's really funny. You'll watch it and then you'll start scrolling through. And then before you know it, you're like, I would never actively choose to watch this.
Yet
here I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about other things like, I don't know if you do ice. I don't know if you do sauna. What do you do to ground yourself, body, you know, fitness, nutrition, all of that stuff?
Sauna
under the umbrella of self-care.
Yeah, yeah. Sauna for me is one of my absolute favorite things to do for so many reasons. I enjoy it while I'm doing it, but I also find that even in what everything I've studied, but it just impacts your mental health so positively. You just, everything for me improves when I sauna regularly. I'm a lot calmer. I'm a lot more focused. I feel better. My energy levels are better, not to mention all the kind of behind the scenes benefits that we're not realizing straight away, you know, for your brain health and longevity and all of that. So sauna for sure.
Is that daily or a few times a week?
Probably around 4 times a week.
Okay, yeah.
4 times a week.
And how long are the sessions?
I do dry sauna, not infrared. So I do 20, 25 minutes in the dry sauna. Yeah.
Nice.
But my goal is to own a sauna so I could do it every single day. That's like my dream. You have one, don't you?
I have one in my garage right here. I was showing you. So I go from my house to my garage at night once we put the kid down. And like you, this is infrared, but like about 30 minutes a night.
That's great.
But you're right. Especially in the winter, it's fucking like church. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's incredible. Yeah. And ice baths, I don't have one. And the place where I go for sauna doesn't have one either. But every time I go to Bali, my partner and I go to this place with an ice bath and we're going twice a day. We just love it so much.
Yeah.
So we're get one for sure.
That's a little bit harder. That's a little bit more of a challenge. Yeah.
100%. And I find it's a really good mental challenge. If you want to know what focused is, get in an ice bath and your mind isn't racing. You're really present in the zone. A lot of people think, oh, but I struggle to focus on my breath. Do an ice bath. And that really teaches you how to, you know, just drop down into this focus about your own body, which I find it just phenomenal. And then, of course, exercise. I do a lot of exercise, all kinds of exercise, but I always say to people, even if you're not into the gym or you're not into, you know, anything like that, I think it's so important as far as your brain health is concerned, you want to get your heart rate up for at least 2 to 3 minutes a day, minimum. This is for your, you know, for your longevity. Who cares about aesthetics? We're talking about brain health. You need to get your heart rate up daily. It's so good for you. And you can do this in many different ways, including the sauna. Your heart rate goes up in the sauna as well.
Yeah.
So I try and I'll move my body every single day. Sometimes it's just a gentle stretch. Sometimes I'm going all out and doing a 10K run. It just depends on what I'm in the mood for. Yeah.
Nice. Let's put a bookmark there. I want to know how this all started for you. So, you know, for me, everything started after a divorce 15 years ago and then I started blogging. For you, did something happen in your life or were you always interested in, you know, psychology and also self-betterment and all of this?
Yeah. So I found my interest in the brain. I actually wanted to be an actor. And while I was doing acting, it wasn't going well for me, obviously. And so I thought, oh, I'll just do uni on the side just because I really enjoyed learning. So I thought I'll just do, you know, I don't know what. So I started at uni. I was picking all these electives and I chose psychology.
Wait, did you say uni? I've never heard that term.
Oh,
is that
university.
Oh, I've never. It's like, what is she talking about?
We abbreviate everything here in Australia. And then I realized it's like, this does not make sense.
Different university. Slang, yeah. And then when you were acting, did you come to Los Angeles or were you doing it from there?
I was mainly doing it from Australia. I was submitting a few auditions for Los Angeles, but no, never got that good. But I started, I was doing psychology. And in the first semester, this guest lecturer came in and was talking about neuroanatomy and neuroplasticity. And I was absolutely fascinated. So he basically said to me, I spoke to him after and he said, you should change your major to cognitive neuroscience psychology. So it's more of that neuroscience base. And we were working in labs dissecting brains. I thought this is unbelievable. But I still had this passion for acting. So when I finished uni, I became a personal trainer. Because I thought that would be a flexible job for acting. And that's where my passion for fitness, I literally started being a personal trainer because I thought this is a flexible job, not because I was that passionate about the fitness industry.
Right.
But I found that I started really loving it and it was going really well for me. And in all of that, I had this huge breakup that was kind of the catalyst for all this change.
It was a breakup.
It was a breakup. It was, and I think that a breakup is the the line in the sand for a lot of people mm-hmm. in their life yeah. in a really good yeah. way. It forces you into this direction that you never, or you didn't think you wanted. In hindsight, obviously, mm-hmm. I do. But it kind of forces you to be in a place you don't want to be in. And that teaches you so much about yourself, yes. about your yeah. how you recover, how you deal with adversity. And I...
How long was the relationship?
It was 3.5 years. And I was so in love. And there were no issues. Even in hindsight, even with the, you know, the gift of hindsight, there genuinely were no issues in with each other. It was more so we were just, I can see now, not a good match. And for him, he one day, I think he was harboring this, and he was a really great guy, and he was probably mm-hmm. holding on to this without ever communicating it. And one day he just said, like, I don't feel the same way. I don't love you. And just ended it.
Just
out of the blue. And I was
abruptly
so, so shocked. I couldn't get over it. Hopefully it
was in person, because these days people are doing that via text, this generation, and that's like,
thankfully, it was in person. I know because I've heard some really like horror breakup stories where you'd get ghosted by someone you've been together for years. So it was in person, and he was really trying to make it a conversation, but I was just distraught and I really suffered. And I never spoke to him again. It was this one big conversation, and then it was done. And it felt like this huge loss in my life, and I couldn't understand why. So for nearly a year, I was thinking, surely he'll come to his senses, because we were perfectly fine. Everything was great. He'll come back. Mm-hmm. So I was holding on to hope that he would return, which was I look back now and I think one of the best things you can do in a breakup is to come to terms with the fact that it's done as soon as possible, so you can start grieving it, because I wasn't grieving for so long. So I wasn't able to properly process my emotions. And
what were you doing if you weren't grieving? Were you kind of hoping he would come back?
Yeah.
What were you doing that I mean, you basically weren't letting go in a way, right?
Yeah. I just wasn't letting go. And every time I'd think about it, I was very much in denial. People would say, oh, you know, you'll get over it. And I'm like, well, you've obviously never been through what I've been through. I'm never going to get over this. You just don't understand. Even people that had been through breakups, I just thought that they've clearly never loved as much. Like, I was just in denial, thinking no one's gone through what I've gone through. You know, when you feel that you're the only one that's experienced this, which obviously was not the case. And I just genuinely deep down would look for hints and clues, and I'd be looking at his social media account and trying to find – I gifted him a T-shirt, and one day I saw that he was wearing that T-shirt out, and I'm like, oh, is he thinking of – it's just craziness.
Yes. No, but what we're talking about is great. I'm actually writing a whole book about breakups and
amazing.
What they can do as far as – I believe that after a breakup, like we're talking about, it's the richest soil for growth.
Isn't it?
If you are working on yourself and exploring what happened, how the plane went down, taking ownership, examining the black box, all that. If you're not just like running, numbing, and doing things that are disconnecting you from you, but if you're actually going into your own inner hero's journey, it could be definitely like, I think, the richest soil to grow.
Totally.
And it seems like for you that happened. So once you've kind of accepted, okay, this is over, is that when your thirst for self-betterment and obviously helping other people?
Yeah, definitely. So I got to a point where I realized it had been like about a year at that point, and I was sick of hearing myself talk about it. I was sick of telling people, and I thought, this has to change. This is ridiculous. So I actually went kind of all out, and I bought a one-way ticket to Paris because I thought, I'm changing my life.
Oh, wow.
So I went to
Italy. It's hilarious. You went to Paris. I went to Italy. Yes.
I can't wait
yes.
to have this
and
conversation.
I've never been anywhere, and that was like my gift to myself.
Yes.
And that's where I went. Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah. And I thought, I'm out of here. I am out. And people said to me, are you sure you're not running away? And I said, you know what? I actually think I am running away. I think I need a fresh start. And I don't think running away is the worst thing for me right now, because something needs to change. I need a circuit breaker. I need something, and it's not right here. Mm-hmm. So I bought this one-way ticket, and I kind of got this, apartment for a couple of months in Paris. And it was there where
I how old you were then?
What was that?
How old were you when you went to Paris by yourself?
I was 26. Or 27.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Young.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I remember the night before I left to Paris, I had everything, ready to go. I had quit my jobs. I had given up my apartment. I had sold my car. I streamlined all my This was like a really big transformation for me because, you know, when you sometimes it requires you getting so sick of your situation that you do this drastic change. So I was, it was the night before, and I remember still being so sad about the breakup. And I thought, you're on the brink of this amazing opportunity. I'm going overseas. I'm finally doing this cool thing, and I'm still sad about this. And in that evening, I really noticed I'm still hot. I need closure. I'm still expecting this person to walk into my life and give me a reason as to why. And it's once he tells me that, it's all going to be better. And I thought, it won't be better. He could come into my life and tell me all the reasons, but the outcome wouldn't have changed. I have to provide this closure for myself. I can't be waiting for the person that broke my heart to heal it. It just didn't make sense. I'm putting the power in his hands. And also, he's moved on. He's just – so he should, but he's moved on.
Did you have proof that he has moved on?
I did.
You following?
Luckily, a few months after I unfollowed, and I said to everyone, I said, look, I'm just going insane watching him. So I unfollowed everything. I wasn't keeping tabs. I told everyone not to tell me anything about updates of him. I don't want any information because I thought I'd then fixate. But then one of my friends who I didn't realize I hadn't told her. She mentioned to me that he was in like a proper relationship, probably 6 months in.
And that's what did it for you. Knowing that maybe
it definitely
kind of closed
helps.
That door completely.
I think it really helps. I think it's really good to have something that kind of burns the bridge in a way because, you kind of need that like severing tie.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. But then.
Did you know anyone in Paris or no?
No. Nobody.
Oh, wow.
Nobody.
That's amazing. So you just went.
Yeah.
And also just the fact that you went one-way ticket, rented your apartment or got rid of apartment, meaning that, I mean, speaking of burning your boats, there was no, that's it. You're just moving forward.
Yep.
There was no other gear. Forward.
Yeah, 100%. And I thought, because at the end of the day, worst case scenario, I can come back to Sydney. I'm capable of getting a job again. I can crash at my sister or my cousin's couch until I find a place. You know, I was looking at what is the worst case scenario if this spectacularly fell apart. And it wouldn't be great, but it wouldn't be bad. So I thought, let's just do it.
Right.
And
why Paris, by the way?
Well, I chose Paris because while I was at uni, I actually did a double major. I did cognitive neuroscience and French randomly because I enjoyed languages. And I had never used the French. And I thought, well, this is waste. I might as well kill two birds with one stone and work on my French while I'm there. And it was an unbelievable experience. I learned more about myself in the first couple of months of being there than I think I had in the years prior. It forced me into so much growth. It was honestly incredible. It's not to say the whole thing was easy because it wasn't, but it forced me to meet new people. It put, you know, learn another language. All these new experiences created such a gap between who my new self was versus my old self in that relationship that even if the opportunity to return to that relationship came up, I knew deep down, I knew no matter how much I cared for him, I just couldn't go back anymore. I had just taken my life to the next level as far as knowledge and experiences. That I was a different person in an evolved version of myself that I couldn't go back and I wouldn't want to. And that's when I really realized that this work and putting yourself through new experiences and forcing growth was the key.
Yeah.
And so then when I came back a couple of years later, there was a lot of travel back and forth. I went back again to Paris.
Wait, everyone listening wants to know if you found love in Paris.
No. Although I kind of had fun.
It sounds so romantic.
Yeah, I had fun in Paris. It is definitely the city of love for good times. But I had a good single life in Paris, which was great.
Nice.
And it was really nice to be able to date and have fun there without getting attached because I always felt like I was super attached to one person I would date only because I'd had this one big love that I expected the next one would be the same. And it was just a really, really nice time, I was working there, I was teaching Pilates there, I was just doing everything. It was amazing. And
did you get to explore, I mean, you're 26, so you did, all your late 20s in Paris. Did you get to explore your sexuality? Did you get to explore dating? Did you get to explore, all of that stuff that actually is required. That's actually great.
Totally. Yeah. I went on dates. I slept around a little bit. It was just a really great time to feel. It was quite liberating, you know? And I remember getting there and I was doing things that were just so out of my comfort zone. Like I would, you know, in the evenings, I would sit on my little balcony with a glass of wine. I'd have a little glass of wine and a cigarette, and I'm not a smoker. You know, just like random things that I would change up my day just to think, this is your one time in Paris. Let's just really live it and experience it. I made friends with this French girl at a nightclub, and I thought, get out of your comfort zone, Alexis. So I started talking to her. Her English was great. I was practicing my French. She then said to me, oh, well, you know, why don't you come to brunch with my friends tomorrow? And normally I'd be like, yeah. And it never happened. The next day I'm messaging her saying, hey, are we still on for brunch? All good. If not, because I thought, what's the worst that can happen, that she doesn't reply? And she's like, yeah, of course, we're expecting you. Here's the address. So I rock up to this brunch with, you know, six French girls. And that was really throwing myself in the deep end. And from there on, they took me under their wing. And I was part of this group of French girls, and Shay, the girl that I initially met, we message each other every single week now. Like it's a lifelong friend that I found.
Wow.
And it was cool because, not that there's anything wrong with hanging out with expats, but I thought, try and make friends with French people. Like, try not to gravitate to Australians while I'm here. And it was really cool that I was able to do something like that.
Hey, if you're listening, I also want to just remind you, my studio is my garage and my garage door is wide open. You can't see it, but it's raining here in Los Angeles and I love the rain. So hopefully if you could hear in the background, it's like nice ambient noise. It's not thundering. It's just light rain. And, you know, we're talking about Paris and one night stands and all this crazy stuff with the rain in the background. So hopefully it is not an annoying experience that you're having here.
That's great.
So when was the birth of the podcast? When did you say, oh, I want to create a podcast?
I actually, after all my travels, I came back and I, in a like nutshell, started dating somebody, fell in love. This relationship lasted for just under a year. And then long, long, long story short, turned out that he was very much like a textbook narcissist. By the time we broke up, 2 or 3 weeks later, he was engaged to somebody else. Like, it was quite dramatic.
Oh, wow.
And I thought I did all my healing and it was so intense. But funnily enough, even though the breakup was so toxic and he had been cheating the whole time, even though a lot of people think, oh, that must have been so much more painful for you than the first one because of how he treated you. It's a very different kind of pain. And I think because he treated me poorly and because he had cheated on me, it actually gave me so much ammunition to get over it a lot faster. So,
yeah,
I found that actually a good thing in a way. And because of all of that, I thought, right, I'm really suffering again. I've just had all these life experiences. I'm not going to take another year to move on from this. That doesn't need to happen. So I thought, well, I can't get over the brain. I love the brain. I always think about it. So I applied to do my master's degree and I got accepted in. And I thought, this is the perfect thing to funnel my energy into. So I started the master's in neuroscience. And it was incredible. I felt that it was that thing, you know, when you're like really sad and you're really struggling, you get up in the mornings and you've got this thing that you're working towards. It's like your why for the day.
Yeah.
And so I would get up and,
why.
It meant something to me. And I started to realize, wow, there's so much that can be done with, you know, I've gone through my own healing journey. Almost every single person I've met has gone through some form of a heartbreak or adversity. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, how can I tie all of this together? I'm so passionate about, I've looked at my journey and how I was able to recover so much faster the second time because I learned from the first time and all these things. So then I thought, well, let's mix my passions together of being on a stage acting, because I'd given that up years earlier, but I always loved it, and neuroscience. I thought I'd be a lecturer, but I thought, why don't I just start a podcast? Well, I thought YouTube channel originally, but I thought I can't be fucked doing my hair and makeup every time I record. So I thought I'm just going to do a podcast. So I started it.
And wait, how long ago was this?
It was 3.5 years ago or nearly 4 years ago that I started.
Wow.
And
it
just took off pretty quickly because I would speak about these concepts around you know, heartbreak, overcoming adversity, taking a leap of faith, all these confidence, self-love, all these different things. And I would try and give, you know, scientific explanations wherever possible, or, you know, reference studies, or give examples of things. And people really, really liked it. And there's this, you know, the younger generation that's coming through, they're really into science. They really like science. And I thought, this is so cool that, you know, a lot of people were writing to me saying, you've got me studying psychology now. You got me studying neuroscience now. I'm really into it. Mm-hmm. And the main thing when I meet someone on the street who listens to my podcast, which is my favorite thing in the world, most people who approach me will say, you've pulled me out of a really dark time. And for me, that's amazing. If that's share something, if I can just give someone like a flicker of hope, or for them to think, oh, it's possible to make this change. Oh, if I start doing this, this is going to be the outcome. I think a lot of people think it's purely, oh, think positive thoughts, but it's so much more than that. There's behavioral things you can be doing, even if you can't change your thoughts to start with. You can change your routine and your behavior, and that then changes your thoughts, and that then changes how you feel.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. I'm a big believer in that. Just to stay home and white knuckle changing your thoughts, that's not the only way. I know for me, after my divorce, I got out of my house and out of my head. I got into CrossFit at the time. I bought a motorcycle. I didn't know what I was doing, but I realized now, looking back, there was a lot of neuroscience happening in that I was doing somatic things daily as a routine, and that changed my state, and then eventually changed my thinking. So yeah, I did that for 10 years. And so I think that's why your podcast is popular and people love what you talk about, is there's so many different ways into change.
Yeah, that's right.
This is a great segue, because I was going to ask you, what would you say, I know you've done so many episodes, but what would be three quote unquote mindset hacks or things that have helped you or other people when it comes to any area of your life? So you pick three that you resonate with, three concepts, and then we'll kind of give that to my audience.
So the first concept that I talk about really often, and it's resonated with a lot of people, is that I like to think of happiness as kind of in three pillars. And if you can touch on these three pillars every single day, then you're going to feel pretty good in general overall. And that is, so the first pillar is to focus on growth in any area. If you can show that you are growing in some area, and it can be learn how to do a Rubik's Cube. Now, can you beat the time? Start, you know, it sounds right. so basic, but people underestimate the brain, right? So when you achieve something, even if it's tiny, it changes how you approach the next challenge. It changes, you become a lot more proactive instead of reactive. You become more of a growth mindset instead of a fixed mindset. And it's just by having these, you know, little, I've grown in this area, I've learned this thing, I've improved in this thing. I used to do 8 push-ups, now I can do 9. It's tiny. So the growth doesn't have to be massive growth in your career. It's anything, but growth every single day. Right. The next one is connection, and real connection. The feeling that you get when you have a real connection with somebody is unmatched. It's so nice. You know,
and wait, can it be any connection? Does it have to be romantic connection? It can be platonic connection?
And it can be with
okay.
I mean, ideally people, but it can also be with your pet as well. Dogs and cats are a great way where you feel a deep connection, where you can feel like, you know, but it's real connection. If you live alone, but you have a dog, get on the floor, lie down with the dog, really feel that you're giving 100% of your attention to this animal, and in reverse. If it's with a person, pick up the phone and speak to them on the phone. If you happen to not texting, it's not about texting. I want this real connection. Yeah. And it could also be with a stranger. You know, you might go to the same place every single day for coffee, but why don't you genuinely look the barista in the eye and say, how have you been? I've never really asked you X.
Right.
And you'll be amazed at how good you feel when someone just responds to you. So, I've got growth, connection, and the last one is purpose. And again, when I talk about purpose, it doesn't have to be this big thing. Oh, I'm saving the world. It's just something really little. And when I talk about purpose, try and find the feeling. What does purpose feel like? And I think that purpose really feels, sorry, there's someone just revving the car in the background, if you hear that.
That's okay. We got the rain. We got the engine revving. This is great. It's real life.
if you don't know what purpose feels like for you, I think a really good purpose to start with is to try and make three strangers smile. That feeling when you can positively impact somebody and they smile and then you smile back, it's so little, but it feels really good. Or if you don't know, oh, how do I make a stranger smile? Go up and ask someone, what cologne are you wearing? It's really nice. You know, give someone a compliment. It could be so basic. It is so easy to make someone who you don't know smile. And the moment someone smiles back, you get a feeling. And that feeling is kind of that feeling that you can then seek out in other areas in your life. It's so small, but it's always the small things that really make, added together, that are making the difference. So I think a lot of people think, my career has to be aligned with my purpose. No, it doesn't. And sometimes it actually is detrimental for your career to align with your purpose, because you're mixing something that's potentially stressful into something that's supposed to feel really fulfilling. It's okay to have them separate. And your purpose does not have to do with money whatsoever. You know, your purpose could be, I want to make people feel loved. When I interact with them, I want them to walk away feeling better than before I got there. That could be your purpose, and that's a great one to have. So simplify the purpose and try and work on it every day.
I love that. And I want to add to this, because what you're saying is so great and tangible, the three pillars for happy. So when she says, or when you say, like you're not in the room, when you say small goals, accomplishing growth, right? So whether you're solving a Rubik's Cube or you're doing 9 push-ups, whatever it is, what comes to me, the byproduct is hope, the injection of hope. Because you did one more, or because, you know, you give yourself an experience that's slightly different, so you're getting that dose of hope. When you say connection, so eye contact, I mean, I'm thinking the chemicals in our brain, dopamine, oxytocin, when we do connect with someone we feel something. So yeah, the human exchange is so powerful. And if not human, like you're saying, animals, pets. Some people actually love animals more than humans. So maybe that would be
maybe
the best choice.
And maybe that's where you start. Then, if you're someone that's, you know, at the moment feels like the world is against them right now, and you're trying to, how do I change that? Start with animals and then work your way up from there.
Yeah. And then the third one, purpose, is huge, because it's now not about you. It's something greater. And I think we get stuck when we just think about ourselves and our own problems and, you know, who we're not with and you know, how much further we have to go. When we start thinking about how we are a catalyst in this world, your podcast is a great example, to service other people or to help someone else, we almost get out of our own way. And I think that process is very empowering.
And what you said about that, it's so true. It does have to be outside of yourself when it comes to purpose. A purpose can't be completely within yourself, because that's a hobby, it's a whatever. A purpose is, I like to think of it as, what is my role to play in society, in the community, in this world? When you look at those blue zones where people live the longest, the oldest people, they'll be 100 and they still make themselves useful to the community. It's this idea of, how am I contributing? And you don't, again, it doesn't have to be this crazy thing. It's can I still work this job? Can I still play my role in this thing? Can I help the children cross the road on their way to school? Can I, whatever it is, but how am I a piece in this puzzle, in this community?
Yes, I have value. I'm not invisible. Yeah. Makes you feel less alone. So as you're listening to this, think about your current life. Do you have, just, you know, as a practice in your day-to-day, do you have connection with people? Or are you just, you know, if you're like me and you work from home, make your own hours, are you just staring at screens all day? You know, do you have an authentic connection? If you're in a relationship, do you make eye contact? Do you guys, you know, put the phones away? Do you guys touch? Do you guys make love? Do you, you know, what is it that you guys do to connect? And then what about your purpose? You know, many people are punching clocks, they're in shitty jobs, and they're just kind of doing it for, you know, insurance or a 401k. And that's okay. But then what excites you? What can you do to create a bridge so that isn't, you know, the only thing that like people who, because I used to be one of these people because I've had shitty jobs, people who go to sleep dreading the next day. I mean, it's such a horrible, feeling.
Yeah. And or when the Sunday rolls around and they're just dreading that they've got another 5 days
so
of work
happy
until the weekend again, you know?
Yes, yes. I think that compounds. I don't think that's sustainable. So, you know, look at that part. And then the first one she was talking about, which was
growth.
What was the first one?
Growth, connection, and purpose. Yeah,
growth. Oh yeah, what? Right. And growth, like she said, it doesn't have to be huge. It can just be one thing. It could be one pull up. It could be, you know what, I did yoga today. It can be something that I put the candy bar down.
Yep.
You know, whatever it is. Is growth happening
100%.
In your life?
And I always say that when it comes to growing and disciplining and whatever, pick something that's really, like you said, like it's easy to measure. I think if you can discipline the body, you can discipline the mind. So a lot of people that struggle to discipline their mind, start with your body. Start, you know, I ran 500 meters today and then the next day it was 600. You'll be amazed that as you start to have physical discipline, and it doesn't have to be an exercise. It could be in, you know, other physical exercises that you're doing that's not working out. But that is, to me, the first step to learning to discipline your mind. It's all connected.
Since my podcast is shot glass, not wine glass, let's just do one more instead of three. So one more as we wind down.
What's one thing that I – just trying to think of something that maybe I've done recently. This is relatively basic, but it's something that I could bang on about until the end of time, but it's the importance of a morning routine. I think it will change absolutely everybody's life when you have a morning routine. And I always say, and not just in the morning, but routines in general, anytime you can tag a few tasks in a row back to back that's unchanging always, you never have to think about it, and you can you give that job to your subconscious mind. It's no longer a conscious process. So many of us wake up and we think, oh, do I do this first or do I do that? And we waste not only do we waste time, but we waste decisions. And we've got a decision-making quota every day. And it's not that you can't make decisions later, but it becomes more difficult for your brain to make a quick, sharp decision the more fatigued you are mentally. So if you're wasting these decisions in the morning on what do I do this, it's such a waste. It's such a waste. So if you wake up in the morning, you think, well, I know that I get up and I drink a glass of water and then I go and I wash my face and I sit back down and I meditate, and you've got the first 10 tasks just done no matter what, you'll have so much done. You'll feel amazing. You'll be awake earlier than you thought. You've got all this shit done, and then you're ready to use that decision-making quota to the important tasks in the day. So I could bang on about morning routines forever. They're just the best.
Yeah, I agree with you. And let's do this just to show people that your morning routines are customized and you know, uniquely different. What is your morning routine, broad strokes? And I'll tell you mine. And I'm pretty sure they'll be wildly different. But they both work for us, right? So Alexis, what's your
morning routine?
What's yours?
Is I wake up at 5:15. Although now I'm starting to wake up at 5 because I've started at this new gym that does these classes. But let's call it 5:15. Wake up.
You have me beat already. Not that it's a competition, but
I just enjoy a good early morning. But anyway, I'm also a big advocate for naps.
Yeah.
So if you're like, oh, I couldn't do that, naps are great as well. But I'd get up at 5:15. First thing I do is drink a big glass of water, because two things: it helps you wake up straight away, and it's also, you know, the best way. You hydrate your brain straight away. So it's really, really good to feel alert, focused, all of that. So glass of water. I go and brush my teeth just so, again, I'm more alert because the mint and all of that. And then I'll meditate for 15 minutes. And sometimes it's guided. Sometimes it's just in silence. It just depends. Sometimes I'm a bit, so I'll do a guided one, but it's meditate for 15 minutes. And then straight after that, I'll get my workout clothes on and I'll exercise somehow. Sometimes I'll go to a gym. I'll sometimes just go for a walk with the dog. I'll do all of that. And then after that, I will then have a coffee. I can do that alone. I can, after my workout, sometimes meet friends with the coffee. And only after the coffee do I look at my social media. Sometimes I won't even look at it until way later. But I won't.
Yeah. That's a lot of discipline. Wait, so you don't have coffee till like 3 hours
probably
after
2 hours.
You've been awake?
Probably 2 hours. Yeah. Yeah.
2 hours.
And
okay.
Just,
wow.
Yeah, I love coffee. I'm a big coffee drinker. I'm a huge advocate for coffee. Mm-hmm. It's actually quite good for the brain, all these studies have shown.
Yeah.
But I love it. But I just, I find that it, you know, sometimes, you know, if my day's kind of skewed and I've had to work out later, I love coffee as a pre, kind of, it's nice before the workout. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's kind of what my mornings look like 95% of the time.
I love it. And look how different my morning is going to be. So I'm going to paint you a picture of my morning because right now I'm working on a book. So when I'm working on a book, my morning is very different than if I'm not working on a book. I get out of my house. I mean, we're talking about, you know, bedhead and what are they called? Eye cookies or whatever. Don't wash myself. Don't wash my face. Don't brush my teeth. I don't even think I get the water in. I get to a coffee Love shop it. As fast as I can. So I'm not up at 5, mm-hmm. so more like 6. Like the earliest coffee shop here is 6 a.m. At the coffee shop,
yeah.
I wake up. Then I get the water. I have a pour over. I dropped a $10 for the best coffee because I am also kind of a coffee snob. And then instead of social media, instead of emails, any of that, because that can get you to, you know, sink and suddenly you're doing, you know, spinning. I just go straight into my book. So coffee, just waking up, and I have to be at a coffee shop because I need to see people come in. I need to – I love being the first one there, and then as people kind of come in at 8 o'clock, I feel like, ha, I've been here for 2 hours.
I love that.
What have you done? You know? So, like, it just feels good. And then, you know, she was talking about connection, eye contact, smiling at the kid, petting a dog. I just kind of, like, integrate with the atmosphere, and that helps me tremendously, right? So I pick at the book for like, I don't know, maybe an hour or two. Then I go home, wash my face, brush my teeth, kind of get ready. And then I, you know, check my emails, the social media, that kind of stuff. And then I will do a different type of creative thing. So if I was writing a book in the morning, now I'm podcasting or I'm writing a blog or I'm, you know, doing stuff for Instagram. And then I cut my day in half and then I go straight to the gym. At about 11, but I go to the gym always on my motorcycle. So it's a 20-minute drive, and at that time, there's no traffic. So my motorcycle is my meditation machine.
I ride a motorcycle as well. Yes, what do you have?
Oh, do you? This is a giant Harley Road Glide, but it's a Harley.
I have an Aprilia, I've had 750.
Six different ones. Oh shit! That's like a sport
like
bike.
Those
that's
Italian, like, I love that, and it is a meditation. That's what I tell people. The motorcycle is a meditation.
Yes.
You've just got your helmet on. It's just you and the bike. I love it. I love it.
Well, if you're not present, you're gonna die. So it forces you to like you're not thinking about taxes, right? You're just so present. And you're exercising that. So I know that if I take my motorcycle 20 minutes, I'll be hitting flow states. I'll be present. I'd be out of my head. So for 40 minutes, 20 minutes there, 20 minutes back. And then at the gym, I'm not just going in the corner, working out by myself, high fives, chest bumps, human connection, jokes, be silly, get in my workout. And I always take a class.
Yep.
I always make, because if I take a class, you know, it gives you that structure and all that. And then I come home and then I'll jump in on ice or take a shower. And then I'll go into something else that's creative, like sessions. Right now, I'm doing this thing on YouTube where two couples fall from the sky, and I'm giving a free couple session, but something different than what I was doing before. So I'm constantly changing my brain as far as being creative, not just like in one gear grinding, you know?
Right. Just
so I think I lost you. That's my morning routine, and that works for me, and it's a little different than yours. Although we do have the motorcycle.
That is a great routine, and. There's two things that I love about that. Well, I love the whole thing, but I love that you're using the first part of your, you know, your creative muscles and your decision-making, your attention onto the important task, which is the book. I think a lot of people think, I'll do all these little tasks first and then I'll get to the book. I think it's so good that you do that early because you're getting all these, like all the juices flowing at that time. And also there was this study that was published around where people either study or do their work. And a lot of people, if you work from home, it actually can stifle your creativity. They say that if you change your environment and you're out, you know, a cafe is great because even though it's the same cafe, it's different people coming in and out. There's things happening. And if you remove yourself from that environment and you're in kind of this novel place, then you're more likely to stay focused because there's stuff going on around you that you're just slightly hyper aware, and that translates into better focus on the task as well. So when I do any hectic creative tasks or writing, I prefer to be out of the house or even out of the office. I have to be out in a cafe.
Yes. Yeah. I agree. And you know, if yours is different and you like to be alone in your studio or whatever, you got to do what works for you. But I agree with you. Environment is huge, and writing or podcasting can be very lonely.
Yeah.
You know, and so don't isolate. Engage in the world. You know, be a part of the world. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for these tips. They're amazing. I love them. They kind of remind me of the stuff that I do.
It's so good to speak to like-minded people because you just like bounce ideas off and then you hear things in a different way. And I love it.
Yeah. What's before we leave, what's next for you? What are some of your goals for 2024?
I'm going to start doing live shows. That's probably the biggest one. I've never done my own live show, and I've been talking about doing it for a while. So that will be the first one, which is really exciting.
Ooh. Renting out a theater? So, what do you mean live?
Doing a theater. I'm starting with one in Sydney. And then, so my agents, we're talking about doing a tour around Australia, which will be.
Yeah. I hope you make it. You think you'll make it all the way to
That's
LA?
That's the dream.
And then what happens, you'll get discovered and suddenly you're going to be an actress and you're going to be like, I just took the longer route to be an actress.
Yeah.
Live shows. Well, that's amazing. Well, that's another example of the actor in you being fed, right? So even though you're not doing movies, but a show is a show. And so combining passion and then also your acting
gifts. So great. I never thought, I think I always thought I have to, if I'm going to be a performer, it's got to be in acting. And then I don't think I ever broadened my horizon to think a performer can be in so many other avenues, you know, and it's just happening in this way, which is amazing.
So what we kind of have in common was I was a screenwriter for 10 years in Los Angeles and I quote unquote a failed screenwriter, got a divorce. And I thought that part of my life was wasted until I started writing self-help books. And I'm on book number 6, and I realized the tracks I laid as a screenwriter has helped me significantly writing self-help books. So it wasn't a waste.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
It was a gift. It just translated
never a
into
waste.
Self-help.
If you're always putting effort into something, it's never a waste, no matter what it feels like at the time.
Yeah. They're like boomerangs. Yeah. They'll come back around.
That's so true.
You know, in different ways. Okay. I also, with my guest episodes, ask them to help me title it.
Okay.
So as we end, what's a great title? And it could be long, you know, like Tim Ferriss, his titles are like a paragraph.
Yeah. Oh, so, that's such a good, that's,
yep,
that's,
we talked about morning routines.
Yeah. I love that you do that. Okay. What could we title this?
Paris, yeah, something like, morning routines. I know
running away
motorcycles.
surely motorcycles have to be in there.
Okay. So Paris, motorcycles, and morning routines.
That's the best.
I love it. My first bike was a Ducati Monster, which is kind of like yours.
Yeah.
And then and then I went on and had a Triumph,
that's
all different
so cool.
types of bikes.
Triumph is great.
Yeah. It's amazing.
I used to work for Red Bull back in the day, and they had a Red Bull branded Triumph, and it was because I was the only one that had that. So it was my job to take it to events and stuff, and it was a great bike.
Is Australia, I'm assuming, lots of wide open roads?
Heaps, yeah. Because everything's so spread out here.
Yeah. It's not like... Yeah, not like traffic.
No.
I mean, of course, in Sydney,
where I live, it's a lot of traffic, but then it doesn't take that long to get out and then you can go. And there's so many good rides. There's a lot of mountains on the outskirts of Sydney, in every direction mountains, so you can go for nice long rides. Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you so
much.
That's great.
Yeah. I'm excited
to
be on your podcast now. If you're listening, I'll be on her podcast, Do You Fucking Mind? So check that out. And we're creating bridges today. So thank you for listening. Be well.